Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is June 2nd, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Our theme tonight is global slowdown bites. Economic activity is clearly slowing. G7 announced after the meeting in Japan that they are agreeing on ways to spur growth. Japan was said to push for crisis language in the G7 communique, and after it was issued, the OECD came out and also warned that there was a need for more fiscal stimulus to head off a real economic crisis coming. Examples of the slowing activity: the oil glut is evidenced by tankers lined up around Singapore and subcontinent. It's a great link from Zero Hedge in the website today. The Saudis are considering a $15 billion bond deal that says their cash flows are showing great weakness. A sign of the weakness is the indications now from Congress that the 28-page report related to the Saudis on 9/11 is going to be released sometime this summer. We'll see what happens. There is a wheat glut story from Bloomberg posted on the website. Global glut sends exports to 34-year low as output set to rise. Food exports, very important part of the U.S. economy. So this is painful. Let me just read you an excerpt. Some American wheat farms are not only going to lose money on every bushel they harvest this month, many won't have a proper place to store it. U.S. grain silos still hold surpluses from last year, et cetera, et cetera. With demand slowing and output rising, space will get tighter, especially for wheat, which is the first one harvested. Some growers may dump grain in parking lots or vacant buildings. Michael O'Day, a risk management consultant in Kansas City, says, quote, "It will be the worst storage crunch in 30 years I have been trading wheat," quote. The global glut in all different sectors, not just in agriculture and commodities, and we're seeing it in manufacturing too. Global glut will help keep interest rates low no matter what the Fed does. Another interesting report, different sector on the slowdown, Mary Meeker's annual presentation on internet trends indicates adoption of the internet smartphone slowing as the global GDP slows. What that means is the train tracks of the global digital currency can't be built out in a deflationary spiral. That's a big uh-oh for the globalists who are depending on that infrastructure. All eyes are on the Fed. The Fed is indicating it will raise interest rates in June. I think it's likely they'll bump them 25 basis points. The economy is not as strong as Yellen says. Incomes, I believe, are falling. The problem in the U.S. is that productivity is flatlined, and this consists of many elements. I put up on the website a speech from the World Economic Forum by IMF Deputy Minzu. He uses a lot of slides in the World Economic Forum. He used them in a presentation I saw him give in Australia. Very impressive. What he brings it down to is the importance of the need for increased productivity in government, healthcare, education, which are all key components of place-based equity. What's very interesting is if you look at the plans underway to, quote-unquote, increase productivity in those sectors, they're essentially the big corporations doubling down on the things they've gotten to increase their market share that have had such a remarkably negative impact on place-based equity. In other words, we're improving the return on investment to companies by destroying the return on investment to place-based equity, and the net-net is negative, which is why for many years I've called this the negative return on investment economy. But it is true we need significant improvement in productivity. What we need to do is stop all the things we're doing to destroy productivity. Another perfect example is Reuters had an article this week also up on the website. 450 billion plus a year estimated cost to the global economy of cyber warfare and security is what I call zero integrity systems. So the idea that the people have given us zero integrity systems are going to double down by digitizing healthcare and education and keeping the game going so now more parts of the economy are open to be destroyed with cyber warfare is not really attractive. Anyway, a global slowdown is upon us. Money and markets. The U.S. dollar index now down 3.25% for the year. It looks like it's headed up again. Wouldn't surprise me if it traded up in the band that seems to be established right now between 92 and 100. So it wouldn't surprise me to see it head back up to 100. I'd be surprised to see it go over for long. Right now, the star performers in the market are bonds, to my surprise and amazement. The bond aggregate ETF now up 3.51% for the year. The intermediate treasury ETF up 4.82%, and the 20-year plus long treasury ETF, TLT, up a little tad over 10%. The S&P has come back a little bit. It's now up 4% for the year. Europe is essentially flat. Germany's still down. 0.73% is the Germany ETF. The developed markets, minus North America, are down about 0.5%. China is rallying. I think that's probably short term. They're moving up on speculation that they will be included in the MSCI Emerging Market Index this year. The non-inclusion was part of what busted their market last summer. Emerging markets were headed down and now back up at 3.67% for the year. So they're trading somewhat in tandem this year with the S&P. Gold and silver up strongly. In one sense, you could say they're the star performer in the market, but I am very concerned about how that will end up this year. If global slowdown continues and we continue to get significant deflation, I think this could turn around. Anyway, gold now up, the GLD ETF up 14% for the year, silver up a tad more at 15.39%. Oil has turned around and is still up for the year, 3.69%. The commodities index is up 6.67%. That's, if you look at how far it's come down in the last 2.5 years, that's still not a lot of relief, and commodity producers are struggling. One of the worst signs for the stability of the global financial system, a second Zurich insurance executive has committed suicide. If I was going to engage in some wild speculation about what that was about, my guess is you've seen a lot more claims hit the insurance companies that I would describe as insurance fraud. So claims for the World War the World Trade Center I think the World Trade Center was clearly a false flag of some kind, or multiple false flags. And the idea that the Zurich should have, and the other insurance company should have to pay those claims, is very dubious in my mind. But Zurich was hit last year with a claim on the port explosion in China. My guess is that's an act of war, and probably under the policy, they shouldn't be liable. But my guess is our Zurich insurance executive knew too much, and whether it was an assassination or suicide, it reflects the cost of war and related secrecy and lies that are becoming an unacceptable tax on the global system. Organized crime is basically taking too big a piece of the pie. And it's getting too much support from governments, and the cost to the global economy, and the basic trust, because economies flow on the train tracks of trust, and when trust leaves, so does the economic activity. Chinese construction equipment maker on Friday abandoned its pursuit of crane manufacturer in Texas, Terex, and it's just all part of China's global shopping spree, another sign of deflation. It's industry consolidation. Companies prefer to buy other people's cash flow than try and build internally. The space-based economy, despite all the trouble, continues to pick up steam. Jeff Bezos giving a big presentation that he wants to build giant factories in space. Trudge making it the headline of the day. The endless agony of Theranos, the blood testing company in Silicon Valley, with the Illuminary board of Henry Kissinger, Riley Bechtel, and George Shultz, is really in trouble now. Forbes has slashed the estimate of Elizabeth Holmes' net worth from $4.5 billion to zero. And checking on the board, Henry Kissinger and George Shultz are now gone, although Riley Bechtel is still there. You almost wonder if the feds weren't trying to apologize to Shultz for wiping out or contributing to the wipeout of his value on Theranos. He received a U.S. Defense Department award in May. Interestingly enough, Sally Denton has a marvelous investigative reporter and author author of The Bluegrass Conspiracy, and with her former husband, author of a wonderful book about Las Vegas called The Money and the Power. She has a new book out on Bechdel, The Profiteers, and I'll be reviewing it, so keep an eye out for that, because that's going to be a very interesting story. The U.S. presidential campaign just continues to be as entertaining as it's designed to be. We're coming into the California primary. If Sanders wins, and it looks like he's inching ahead in the polls, we're going to be in for some very interesting times. As we come into California, Ken Starr, the former independent prosecutor of President Clinton when he was impeached, was demoted as president of Baylor, and the charge was that he mishandled sexual abuse accusations related to the football team. So you almost wonder if this is part of getting rid of the enemies before Clinton runs, or whether Baylor is afraid of what was going to come out on the Epstein case. And to turn to the Epstein case, I did a book review on the new book that was just published by Conchita Sarnoff called Traffic King, about Jeffrey Epstein, who was a hedge fund manager who, I believe, if you look at what we can see of what he was doing, I believe was intimately involved in the mortgage fraud and the housing bubble. But he was prosecuted by the Department of Justice as a pedophile, successfully prosecuted, but was very much involved in the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons, President Clinton having ridden on his jet apparently many times. But it appears that he donated $4 million and one of the founding funders of the Clinton Foundation, which my guess is, given those cash flows, could easily have been money laundered from what was coming out of HUD or the mortgage bubble. So very dangerous. Now, Ken Starr was one of his many attorneys. So you almost wonder if the Baylor wasn't trying to move Starr out before the white light got too hot. I've asked our blogmaster to put up a link to an MSNBC video. On Monday, a group of reporters were discussing the fact that the Trump campaign could possibly use the Epstein case, and I think even use the, they were careful maybe not to use the pedophilia word, but discussed the fact that Epstein was prosecuted for sex with underage children. And if you read the Conchita Sarnoff book, Trafficking, it's quite, the sexual allegations are quite bad. And one of the summaries of the reporters contemplating a Trump campaign that was going to bring out all the dirt on the Clintons said, you know, if you talk to any country leader or ambassador, the U.S.'s reputation is shattered. It's been shattered by George W. Bush and Obama for their foreign policies. And then we're going to go into a campaign where we're going to talk about things like this. It's going to destroy the U.S. reputation. And that's what I saw in Australia. The world is getting quite an education about how corrupt America is. But if Donald Trump decides to go through the Clintons' dirty laundry, it's the world's really going to get an education. So if Clinton is the nominee, the price of the campaign will be very heavy for the entire American establishment, because the U.S. establishment is going to be put on trial and everyone's going to lose. And if that's what has to happen to clear the corruption, then I say let's clear the corruption, because the corruption is what's destroying the productivity, or it's a big contributor to it, and we've got to get rid of it. Someone sent me a note, a wonderful subscriber, that said, please note that there have been allegations that the Bush-Clinton dynasty has buggered the global economy, so badly that there is a civil war going on in the top echelons because the system has been seriously damaged and it actually threatens the upper crust. Heavy speculation on this. Richard Haass of CFR fame has allegedly also met with Trump, and this video alleges he may be in the Trump cabinet. If so, expect not a change. These meetings superficially back up my big club thesis, where you don't get to be a billionaire or senator without being in the big club. Actually, Haass is a big change. Haass is strongly anti-neocon, and he was the author of an article I've quoted many times over the last year and a half. He wrote an article called The Unraveling published in Foreign Affairs. He's head of the Council on Foreign Affairs. And I've quoted it on many occasions. It's quite good. So Trump continues to endear himself with Americans. He announced the other day that only dummies believe the Fed's unemployment figures. Now that is a statement that will win him votes. Anyway, so Haas is a change, but the establishment is clearly worried about flatline productivity and populist backlash and a refusal to participate in the system. Nobody wants to put money or time into a negative return on investment system. Nobody wants to get harvested. So there's real trouble because essentially this is the end of the debt growth model. Without the subsidy from the debt growth, there are too many people backing away from the system. And there's real pain of sort of moving from here to fundamental increases in productivity. So it's not to say that parts of the establishment are not sitting pretty. They are, because they took $40 trillion out before the, you know, before the nut cutting time came and before we had to face these issues. So they've got $40 trillion from the financial coup, and with the money safely in 3.0, accountability has begun in 2.0. That's going to bring prices down in 2.0, and their money will just go further. Our hero this week is Bertram Verhaag, who is the director of Scientists Under Attack. We have a great Salieri Report interview with him. He did many great documentaries on food and farming, and an extraordinary man. And Harry Blaser and I discuss him today in our interview on food, our introduction to a new exciting series in the Salieri Report on food, which I'm very pleased about. While we're on the topic of heroes, I have to discuss anti-heroes. Our delusional evil doer of the week is Alan Greenspan, who announced that the Western world is headed for a state of disaster. Really, Alan? Do you think that's the case? His lecture said that productivity is flatlined. Now, that's interesting because no one person has done more to destroy the productivity in the U.S. economy than Alan Greenspan. And my suggestion is, and if I was Mr. Global, this, I assure you, is what would happen. I would suggest that Alan Greenspan go to work for the next year cleaning bathrooms, working for a crew of cleaning ladies at a Super 8 motel in rural Oklahoma. And after a year of earning his living by doing something productive, he can explain to us what is wrong with productivity in America and how he became a multi-billionaire destroying productivity in America, while the cleaning ladies at Super 8 do not make a living wage doing something productive. Anyway, that's my proposal for our anti-hero, Alan Greenspan. Okay, Ask Catherine. Thank you for so many great links. We got many great suggestions, and you can see them in topics on the website. Okay, we have many questions tonight, so the question section is going to be long, but great questions. So let me go through this and certainly compliment you on the quality of your questions. Question number one, I'm wondering if you have heard anything about the above company that we should be concerned about or clarify before signing our loan documents. We've been approached to change our mortgage to the above company through my husband's work, and it's reduced the term 25 to 15 years, lowered interest rates, looks like about 60 basis points. Even though the loan is over 90%, they have removed PMI payments. Seems almost too good to be true. The rep has said that they wouldn't sell the loan, and we've just received the documents. It says they're able to in one of the first three pages. If there has been any negative info about them that you've heard, I'd love to know. I've been listening to your work every spare moment. Can't seem to get enough. It's very sobering. Thank you for bringing the truth to us. I think the next step for us is talking to one of your staff about how best to navigate our own situation. They were asking about Quicken Loans. I've never heard a negative on Quicken Loans. I've heard a lot of positives about the company as a place to work and its impact on, I believe it is in Detroit. I've seen one headline on civil action against Quicken by the U.S. government. It looked to me like Quicken was the good guy in the picture. So I don't consider that to be a negative, but I know of no negatives. If they do have the power to sell your loan, you want to track and make sure you know when they do, although I would expect the servicing might change. As long as they keep the serving thing, you should be okay. But it's a reminder, if it's not at a good local bank where you have a relationship, then you absolutely want to make sure that you are really watching the servicing of your mortgage. It's just part of taking responsibility for your financial affairs. Question number two, as science can now create artificial diamonds and petrol, is there any chance they can create clone gold? John Dee and Edward Kelly during Elizabeth one time had a quest to transform base metals into silver and gold using the Philosopher's Stone. I don't know. In theory, there should be a way to do it. In theory, somebody should figure it out. Is it happening? My guess is no, but no way to tell. The market is not behaving like it can, from what I can see. Question number four. Dear Soleri, I see that Catherine will be interviewing Franklin Sanders within the next several days. If she could, I would love to have her ask him, was the Civil War caused by slavery, or was it caused by economic oppression from the North towards the South? Franklin Sanders is such an astute scholar of American history, I believe he's the best person who Catherine interviews to answer this question. Sorry, I didn't get that question before I recorded Franklin. The war between the states was clearly economic warfare. If you look at who really incited the war, it was very much the same people who sold the slaves south. I think part of the problem was slavery was allowing centralization in the wrong hands, and there was a real turf war between essentially Wall Street and the moneyed interests and the plantation owners who were just growing in power because the slavery was such an extraordinarily profitable economic machine. I did a review last year on a very interesting book from a professor at Cornell called The Half That Has Never Been Told, which dives in deeply to the economics of slavery, and I think is a very valuable contribution to understanding the role of slavery in pooling capital for the United States. One of the reasons that, let me just read you from the review of Trafficking where I referred to this. One of the reasons slavery was outlawed under President Lincoln was that banks took big losses on financing slavery, as there was no way to perfect a bank lien. Plantation owners were shifting slaves to other jurisdictions and selling them in a manner that defrauded the bankers. Now, with digital technology, there are ways to perfect liens and track collateral, including with implants and DNA testing. This is sobering thought given our leadership practices and beliefs in slavery on a covert basis. Anyway, so I perceive that the slavery issue is a very sensitive one, and I think is going to get to be a bigger and bigger one, because if you look at where things are going, one way to deal with deflation is to just increase dramatically what I call free-range slavery using digital technology. Question number five. If you don't already, Dan Ammerman has nailed every Fed move over the last 6-ish years. I've been following his work. In the first seminar I went to, he called the top in gold. He just posted a series on his webpage, Video Guide to Bail-Ins. Besides being sharp as a tack, he's even a nice guy. I suggest an interview with him or even a regular conversation on Soleri if the stars align. I went to his website and for the life of me couldn't find the video series, so if you could send a link, I would really appreciate it. Question number six. In a recent interview, you used the term federal credit. Is there an online explanation of the term? A web search returns mostly credit unions. Does it refer to a system, currency, or financial metric? The federal credit is all aspects of money and credit creation by the U.S. government. So if you look at what it delegates to the Fed, the powers it delegates to the Fed, its ability to issue U.S. Treasury notes and bonds, and the U.S. Treasury notes and bonds it issues. The insurance programs are extensive. So mortgage and mortgage credit and mortgage insurance at FHA, Ginnie Mae, VA, Freddie, Fannie, the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, bank insurance, FDIC, insurance for the credit unions, insurance for the security system, the SIPC system, SIPC, backstop on the pension benefit guarantee companies, flood insurance, loan guarantees, such as Ex-Im Banks or loans, guarantees of loans for countries abroad, subsidy flows that get leveraged, such as Section 8 housing subsidies, credit on Build America bonds. There's lots more reflected in the municipal markets in the credit of REITs and all sorts of other bonds and stocks. The federal credit is quite extensive, and it backstops and drives a lot of different parts of the economy. So in one sense, you could just say treasury notes and bonds, but actually the federal credit is far bigger than just the treasury operations. So that's when I refer to federal credit, I mean the creation of credit using the federal backstop and guarantee in all the different signs and programs, and how, when I talk about federal credit, I mean all of those programs, and they, I assure you, are much more important and have a much more profound impact on the economy than most people begin to understand. In fact, we should do a Solari report on the federal credit. Thank you for bringing that up. That's the solution. I'll think of who we can do that with. Question number 7, dear Catherine, I greatly enjoyed your interview with Helen Chapman, at the end of which she thanked you for educating her. She was referring to your commentary, giving a much larger perspective on the work she has done with the Madoff affair and its litigation. I have heard you perform a similar function with many of your interview guests, describing for them a larger perspective in which their specialty is located. I'm sure all your members appreciate these seminal contributions to various interviews, but there is an unavoidable drawback to doing this in interview mode. You are compelled to reduce your deep knowledge to a soundbite that will fit the interview mode. With Helen, you pointed out the bigger mission of J.P. Morgan Chase and the other giant banks, helping the federal government garner all the revenue that is needed to build the empire. My brief summary does not do justice to what you actually said, the soundbite barrel. What is needed is for you to put all that deep perspective in a book format. You often use the soundbite, moving from a debt-based economy to an equity-based economy. I only have a foggy idea of what all is entailed in this transition. You have many aspects to your deep perspectives, each of which would be a fine chapter in your book. Writing this book would not merely be a favor to your loyal subscribers, but a badly needed guidance tool for the nation. When the dollar fails as the sole reserve currency and the U.S. falls into serious economic distress as a result, there will be a serious void of good guidance on how to turn this crisis into blessed opportunity. A series of sound bites and cliches are not sufficient. Only a book-length exposition will do, God forbid. But if we have a military coup to stop the runaway financial criminality that characterizes American governance, what that new temporary leadership will need most is a detailed blueprint for a better financial future for America. I cannot think of anyone better qualified to write such a book. You have all the basic skills, a long career with just the right experience at high levels of government and finance, and the moral commitment to not shirk the job. From my perspective, destiny calls you, Catherine. This will be your finest hour, and as the Taoist sage in ancient China put the phrase, your chance to complete your virtuous fulfillment. Surely other subscribers must be saying or at least thinking the same thing. We ache for that book. One of the reasons I went to just communicating this information bit by bit, interview by interview, is I found when I tried to present the whole thing as a overview or in general concepts, it was just too much of a leap for most people, and so I reverted to trying to do it bit by bit, interview by interview. So perhaps now, with the debt growth model over and serious interest in productivity, there's a chance to come back around and lay out a bigger picture. So in the second quarter wrap-up, we're going to start, the title is, quote, Productivity, Prosperity, and the Popsicle Index, Rebuilding Trust Between People, Places, and Money. So I'm going to take a shot at doing a piece of that, and we're also this summer launching the website, which I keep saying we're launching, but we're really launching it this summer. With those two things out and about, I want to see what the response is to them, and my plan is, based on that response, I will then pick up and finish writing a book. I assure you we have many books in the can. So I will pick up and write a book on how to make, it's not really about how to make America great again, because a lot of these lessons apply to all the developed countries. Question number 8, greetings, Catherine, just sharing, when you were interviewing David Talbot, you shared the many stepping on toes that JFK had done and was planning. And then our commenter sends a more information about the involvement of LBJ. I should say, I think the move to hang things on LBJ is a real distraction to protect against the main players. I'm not saying if the truth be known, LBJ wouldn't have criminal liability in the whole affair. But frankly, I think he was pretty much kept in the dark while the people who really did the work got it done. So I don't see him as being anything but a minor accomplice in this affair. Question number 9. Dear Catherine, I'm so looking forward to your thoughts on concussion. I'm one of 8 women in the Concussion Legacy Program with Boston University, along with just over 100 men, mostly NFL players and soldiers, with the signature injury of Iraq and Afghanistan. I didn't realize that was the signature injury of Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm very glad to know that. I've been in the program since 2010 after my 7th concussion, and then she describes how that happened. Back to back, they're the worst kind of what many football players have suffered, often within hours of an injury. I personally think it's like sending a burn victim back into the fire. CTE at this point cannot be fully diagnosed until an autopsy is performed, as you know, but since it is clearly neurodegenerative, the symptoms are glaring. What is equally glaring is the devastating effect on relationships and life in general, depression, suicidal ideation, and suicide, often the cause of death. As you go down this horrible slippery slope, anything of value is either lost or stolen. Bankruptcy courts have their field day, leaving many of us wards of the state, homeless via the crooked lawyer, crooked trustee, and all too willing Article I judge who signs the orders to rape and pillage the estate, as if they don't, someone else will. The ADA, although a federal mandate, is not a mandate to the federal court, as you will. But even if it was, it's really not helpful to protect anyone from the legal abuse. My doctor said the hope with CTE is to slow the decline. Holding fast is the best to hope for. Catherine, against all odds, I am improving. I found a combo of rituals that are proving there is hope. I've been reluctant to watch Concussion until today when I watched the trailer on Solari. I will watch it and contact the doctor to let him contact my doctor should he be interested. My pain is in watching others suffer, knowing and experiencing it firsthand, the helplessness, the rejection, seeing the same black stares on their families and loved ones' faces looking at someone they don't know anymore, and that the abandonment after everyone just gives up on you. I'm in court fighting for what was stolen from me, and she goes into more details on her circumstances. I've gained strength reading your testimony, Catherine, and I must fight for myself as you did. I've made a small dent in court to recover the money and by right our third-generation farm. My heart is to develop a program on the farm to share this hope of recovery. Please pray for me as I pray for you. This is a battle of kingdoms, as you know. Empowered by the Almighty, we will see the bonds of oppression broken. This court will be forced to trade equity for debt by a power much higher and give me back in triple what was stolen. I literally saw this in the spirit I listened to you recently regarding Trump. Blessings, a comrade. Well, wow, keep up the good fight. We're sending prayers. There is no doubt if your capacity is diminished, the danger of dealing with the legal system and the financial system is very great. There are too many fraudsters running around looking. And so it's very important as you hear this story to remember if you or anybody in your family is suffering this kind of disability, you want to get around them, the kind of people who can be trusted to protect their estate and manage whether it's their physical condition or their money in honorable ways. Question number 10, and I do want to point out those people do exist. There are plenty of them around, but you're going to have to go dig and find them. And part of finding them is understanding that many people are not. So there's a real difference, and learning how to differentiate is important. Question 10, greetings, Catherine. Thank you for bringing this remarkable lady to our attention. Hope you keep in contact with her. Helen Chapman shared the many years of relationship between Bernie and J.P. Morgan, and that after a period of over 15 years, a Ponzi scheme was conducted. In those 15 years, J.P. Morgan had a few mergers with other companies. In those 15 years, the J.P. Morgan employees assigned to overview Bernie's account probably were promoted, retired, relocated, quit, or got hired with a competitor. Question, what is the glue that kept J.P. Morgan people mute about the illegal activity? Did they have to sign a document to keep quiet? Many of the investors were newsworthy people that could have been easily contacted. Or are we looking at the attitude of, I'm just doing my job? And then another question, do you think if more women were employed at the upper strata of the financial markets, that would dilute the male's view of the investment industry as a game of winners and losers. Answers. Not a lot of people, this could have been done in a way that not a lot of people would have seen the details. And the ones who would be allowed to see the details are people chosen because of their willingness to play ball. It all gets back to control files and personnel benefits and people not wanting to end up dead. Yeah, I think it's absolutely feasible because I've seen these kinds of huge frauds go on for many years and nobody says bo peep. On the women topic, it's easier to centralize control with women leaders. The push to promote women and put women is so you can centralize into even tighter and righter hands. So it's going to make things more evil, not better. At the same time, I do feel that balance in populations, balance of knowledge, balance of expertise, balance of Myers-Briggs profiles, balance of sex, age, all these things generally produce a better right if you or better result. If you want to know more, read my series, Promoting Women. But the leadership has used promoting women to take control locally. So this is a tactic of essentially taking over power and taking power more for centralized purposes. So I think you need to see it for what it is. And that's why I get my hair up whenever somebody says, oh, the solution is we'll put more women and things will be wonderful. If you want to delete the current win-lose model, you have to replace it with a win-win model. You know, putting women in charge isn't going to do it. If you put women in charge of a win-lose model, then they're going to behave in win-lose ways, same as men. So I think you're going to get a much better result with balanced populations, but you have to deal with the real problem, and the real problem is not that we have too many men running things. The problem is we have a win-lose model, and we're going to have to change that. Question number 11. Hi, Catherine. I'm wondering what your position is on James Corbett and the Corbett Report, and wondering why you haven't interviewed him recently. I like James's material. I post some of his videos, and I expect I will in the future. I've not seen him cover a topic where he's an expert that I wanted to cover. So that's, you know, it's the generally, if you look at whom I'm inviting, they're sort of particular experts in their field. Question number 12 and 13. Hi, Catherine. I've recently received and have enjoyed reading the Saleri Report, Space, Here We Go, Global Investment Takes Off. I'm hoping that you can continue to focus on the most promising companies that merit a closer look from a prospective investment standpoint. What plans do you have in regard, and what can Saleri offer to further assist subscribers operationalize this information about 3.0 and the movement in the direction of the space economy? First, we're updating that list that we had in the annual wrap-up. We're doing it on the new website 3.0. What we've done is sort of cleaned out and updated the U.S. and European companies, and then we're going to be adding Asian companies focused on ones that are publicly traded. And I hope by the end of the year to have a complete global list of all the publicly traded companies with any kind of meaningful activity in the space-based economy. So when 3.0 launches, you're going to be able to find that updated list. That'll come out this summer. But again, I think it's going to take us by the end of the year to get the full list. I'm also working, not in Saleri Report, but in the investment advisory business, on two screens as an investment advisory product. One screen is on companies who fit the definition of the Saleri model. In other words, their return on investment to shareholders has a positive impact on total economic return. The other is companies involved in the space-based economy. So I hope to finish that after we have the complete list by the end of the year. The second part of the question is from a more terrestrial perspective. I continue to read with great interest, particularly in non-U.S. press, about the increasing great strides being made to consolidate the efforts of European and Asian economic interests as manifest in the new Silk Road infrastructure mega project. So I'm also wondering if you're able to accomplish anything similar as you've done with Space 3.0 with respect to the new Silk Road. That is a great idea. It's in the parking lot, and we will consider it after we finish the global list for the space-based economy, one thing at a time. If not immediately, do you agree that this would be a fruitful area for devoting time, effort, and study? Yes, absolutely. Question number 14. Hi, Catherine. I know you think a lot of stuff is fear porn, but do you really think Obama will actually vacate and leave his office to Trump? No way Hillary can legitimately beat him. Seems like a police state isn't too far off with the security issues. Yeah, I think Obama will vacate. I think Obama's ready to get out. The only way he will not vacate is if the deep state tells him to do otherwise. Of course, our challenge is there's factionalism within the deep state, and part is telling him to stay and part is telling him to go. Here's the reality. The Secret Service surrounds the president at all times. They have guns, and their bullets go two ways. As we know from the Kennedy assassination, they can go towards somebody trying to hurt the president, or they can kill the president if he doesn't do what the deep state says. So this notion that Obama's going to do anything is just patently absurd. You need to understand exactly who and what the president is. And just the president is not in control. I think it's also important to understand that the campaign has evolved to the point where it is much more an entertainment process than a political process. So right now we're in a state of entertainment, and part of the entertainment is the fear porn that you've been reading. So yes, I think Obama will absolutely vacate the office. Question number 15. If the banking system is on its way to exploding with debt, do you agree with the people who say that you should just go out and get a big mortgage expecting hyperinflation in a few years and that the dollar will eventually be replaced with something else, meaning you need to hold real estate as protection? I completely disagree with the idea of going out and getting a big mortgage unless you have an enormous cash flow and a 100% chance of that cash flow continuing no matter what happens. First of all, if we get a real monetary meltdown or a banking system meltdown, the debt's not going to go away. The debt's still going to exist. And somebody's going to own and control it. And that somebody, if you can't pay your mortgage, is going to own your house. So, and they may have an anti-deficiency judgment against you. Let's say the house has dropped in value to $100,000. You've got a mortgage of $1 million. They turn around, sell the house for $100,000. They've got an anti-deficiency judgment against you if you're in one of those states of $900,000, and they can come take the rest of your stuff. So it would be absolute madness to think that that debt is going to go away. It's not going to go away at all. What's going to go away is your income, and then you're really going to be in a pickle. Now, will real estate be a good investment? Real estate in areas of 3.0 reinvestment will grow faster than the general economy. In the areas where there's no 3.0 reinvestment, they're going to perform worse than the general economy. And prices are going to be volatile. So you need the ability to function through big drops. And hyperinflation is not a certainty. Right now, what is looking like a certainty is a deflationary spiral. So beware of debt. Question number 16. Oh, I do want to tell one story of a friend who called me and said, and this particular friend is a millionaire. They called me and they said, I have a credit card problem. I said, why do you have a credit card problem? You know, you have no reason to have a credit. They said, well, I have a credit card. I owe $78,000. I said, what? How in the world did you owe $70,000? He said, well, it was 30, but with fees and interest and penalties, it's up to 78. And I said, well, why didn't you pay your bill? And he said, well, I thought the financial system was going to collapse. And what everybody said was to go out and borrow as much money on your credit card, not pay it back. And then when things collapsed, you know, it would be wiped out. So then he owed $70,000. And he said, what should I do? I said, pay your bill. You got the money. You're liable. Pay the bill. I said, if you want, you know, hire an attorney and try and negotiate. But I said, your negotiating position is weak. Please stop listening to fear porn and the lousy advice that they give. I can't tell you how many people have lost their lives to the great global financial collapse. And in the meantime, they're not protecting themselves from slow burn. Okay, question number 17. Hi, Catherine. I've been reading and listening to you since Coast to Coast. Mr. Sanders, that's Franklin, talked about the markets being manipulated, but then in the next breath, he's talking about head and shoulders and technical analysis of these markets. How can you have manipulation and reliable technical indicators? Thank you for your dedication to people and truth. I agree with you. I don't think you can have reliable technical indicators with manipulation of the markets. One of the reasons, if you follow Rambus's excellent technical analysis on precious metals, you'll see the charts look like it's going, for sure it's going one way, and then whoops, it goes the other way, and then whoops, it turns around and goes the other way, and it's really fun to watch him follow the twists and turns. Now, I find technical analysis, even in a manipulated market, to be extremely useful. It's very good at compressing a history of what a particular market has done and then comparing it with lots of other markets. So the ability to compress and analyze history is terrific. The other thing is, in a very manipulated market, even though the charts are a lot less useful to indicate, you know, sort of future behavior, they are very helpful if you know what you want to buy and why you want to buy it. They're very helpful in terms of the timing of when you buy. So if you're following a modified value strategy, I find technical analysis can be extremely useful. But it's not the kind of application, it doesn't have the power it would have in a real market economy. And again, it's very, very helpful to track several markets relative to each other at the same time. For example, this week I just recommended to somebody that they had money in a hedged equity fund, and I recommended that they go into hedged international. And it was because if you look at how low Europe and the emerging markets are compared to the U.S., which is not only diverged strongly in the last couple of years, but this year is really remarkably toppy. So the U.S. market's very high. These other markets are low. Relatively, if you look at the chart, it's very compelling. If you were just looking at today's prices, you wouldn't notice. So I find technical analysis to be extremely useful, but not as a predictor of the future. The future is unknowable. Question number 18. Dear Catherine, I really enjoy your archive of podcasts. Near the very end of the Farrell interview, referring to German policy vis-a-vis Islam, I quote, and this is quoting Farrell, I toss out the hypothesis that maybe this war on terror isn't really a war on terror, maybe it's a war on, and you broke in with really. How would the sentence be completed? Please advise if possible. That was what Farrell was building up to, was basically that the evolution of Nazi International is now an organized crime force globally and is a force to be reckoned with. If you watch the latest Bond movies or the Captain America movies, you'll see reference to a global organized group in the Captain America. It's called Hydra, and Bond is called Spectre. But it's essentially today's evolution of Nazi International. And Farrell and I speculate this about this a lot, especially when you have lots of world leaders going down to Southern South America. You wonder who they're meeting with down there. He continues, I truly enjoy the exploration of the deep state and hidden finance. I love all your guests and follow many of them elsewhere, Dolan, Farrell, McCandlish, and Edmonds. I own a coin shop since 1995 in a town that lays claim to being the epicenter of the subprime meltdown that barely preceded Lehman in 2008. Prior to the coin shop, I worked as a Q-cleared contractor, so I have a little firsthand experience with need-to-know secret government projects. I really hated the work environment, and I'm so happy that I switched to doing what I truly love. I'm always looking for clues about the markets and where they're headed. That's why I'm a subscriber. As I type this, it appears that gold is about to break 1,200 to the downside. I think with a global slowdown, I continue to be worried we get another big leg down in precious metals, although it's been very good about holding that 1,100 to 1,200 line. So let's see what it does. Question number 19. Greetings, Catherine. Have you heard about this? It is so large that it is hard to believe. And then they start talking about the Wanta adult fairy tale. Also, I see Douglas Caddy has recommended viewing the short video covering the operation events. Also, I see Leo Wanta was a recent guest on Coast to Coast. And then there's a link to Eagle One to Wanta. Another adult fairy tale. It's not that it doesn't pick up and resonate with things that really are true, but just move that to the junk file. There's $40 trillion that was stolen from the global economy with the bailouts and with the $1 trillion missing from the federal government and the pump and dump of the stock market. And that's so in your face, a lot of it documented by government documentation. Why is that not interesting when this crap is? It's just amazing to me. I wonder if they're using entrainment. Question 20. Dear Catherine, in your opinion, how much of the push to get people vaccinated comes from a desire from powerful people to both experiment on and bring harm to the general public? I have tried, as I've said many times, to understand what the vaccination is all about. I really don't understand it. I'm presuming that there's some parts of some vaccines that might make sense from a medical standpoint, although at this time I think the credibility of the whole area and industry is so much in doubt that I just, at this point, I have a blanket, no vaccines. I just think the human immune system can do a better job than what's happening. And at this point, I just think there's zero credibility on this whole topic from the medical establishment. So what could the, I think the reasons for the vaccinations are strategic reasons. And there are a number of different possibilities, especially when you combine what's happening with vaccinations with other things. I think one possible explanation is the creation of a functionally autistic population. You kill telepathic and empathetic intelligence, but people can still do a variety of functions. As I talked about this with Jay Dyer when we were going through the mind control movies. What's happening is you're watching an incredible effort to make robots into people using artificial intelligence. And we're also seeing an effort with mind control and things like vaccinations to turn people into robots. And sometimes you wonder if this isn't a giant prototype to figure out who's ideal for serving functions, either advanced robots with AI or easy to control human beings. But it, you know, if you step back and you look at it from the standpoint of the people who are doing the prototype. So if you stop looking at things from the point of view of the chicken, but from the point of view of the farmer who's engaged in livestock management, it's pretty interesting to look at what they've got going on. But clearly they're trying to re-engineer and prototype the re-engineering of the human race. Question number 21. Dear Catherine, you've mentioned that there have been more than 27 trillion in bailouts handed out. Since New York City is the epicenter of the financial industry here in the U.S., in your opinion, how much of the impact have these bailouts had towards improving the economy of New York City? Absolutely, absolutely tremendous, stupendous, unbelievable. New York is rolling in dough from the bailouts and the fraud and the pump and dump of the various markets and the missing money from the federal government. Question number 2. Catherine, I'm a fairly new subscriber of yours. I truly love your work, your interviews, your vast knowledge of the world. I'm dazed and confused, however, on what to invest in. Join the club. With the world seeming to be on the verge of a systemic global collapse of some sort, does this collapse mean we should get out of the market and go to a cash position? Or what the heck does one do? Does this collapse mean the government collapses? Or what is that really saying? It seems we are in a world operating on nothing but a mound of debt. How does the average person survive this? Just a taste, as you say, would be appreciated. Okay, this really takes a much more detailed conversation. It's a conversation you can't have unless you understand absolutely the unique circumstances of each person, which is why you should never take financial advice from any kind of generalized presentation. So with that, let me give you the following generalized presentation, and I apologize for all the repetition. Other subscribers may have heard this many times. One, pay down debt. Do not balloon your balance sheet because that creates financial leverage. And when you have extraordinary volatility or potential for volatility, the last thing you need is that kind of leverage. So pay down your debt. And what I find with most people is their debt, they're paying a much higher interest rate than what they're earning on whatever they've got invested. So pay down your debt. Number 2, reduce your overhead in his investment. The example I always use is as the client and friend who was complaining that their water bill was going up at the same time the yield on their stocks was going down. I said, it's very simple. Sell some stocks and build a wealth. Well, they were in a rural area, so they could do it, and that's exactly what they did. That reduces your operating leverage. You have two kinds of leverage, operating leverage and financial leverage. You want to reduce leverage. So use your money to invest either in your infrastructure or in paying down debt and reduce that leverage. Invest in yourself in your own company or operations. It's nothing better than having a job where the only person who can fire you is you. You want to, for example, if I remember talking to one person who was great at property management, an area that's getting mega bucks, 3.0 reinvestment. And I said, this is really simple. Just buy some more real estate. Dividends matter. Keep earning on your money. One of the biggest mistakes that I and many other people have made over the last couple of years is holding out too much cash, and cash is just burning. You're not, if you can get a good 2-3% yield and a great high quality equity, you're going to lose a lot of money sitting in cash. Used hedge portfolios to address the volatility. The way you can stay in the market and get the dividends is to keep your portfolios hedged. And it works if you've got a good money manager because the mathematics avoiding the big downs are compelling. Buy and hold does not work anywhere near as well as buy and hold that's modified for leaving the market when you really turn bear. And right now we're in a bull market. So the question is, problem with turning bear is you have to be down 25-30% before the bear can be established. So nobody wants to take a 25-30% down. The way you avoid that is with hedges. Focus on quality, 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 quality in all things, quality in custodians, qualities in companies, quality in governments. You know, when you invest, you have to differentiate tremendously between low quality and high quality. And it's not just a matter of ratings or recommendations from whether it's rating agencies or investment houses. I was looking at a portfolio of municipal bonds the other day. They all had reasonably good or high ratings. But the ability of the different organizations to make it in the divergence between 3.0 and 2.0, some of them were going to be fine in 2.0, but 3.0 was going to run them over. Some were going to be fine in 3.0. But you have to, if you got a maturity other than a short maturity, you've got to make sure that you've got the quality to go the distance and have endurance. That said, you know, we're in a very uncertain world. Anything can happen. And that's why it's important to stay broadly diversified and be patient. The reason you have diversification is because some things are up and some things are down. And you have to be willing to live through the swings and the corrections. And that's why it's so very important that you get a yield or you get a dividend. One of the reasons I said what I said about the international markets is given the divergence in the stock markets, you can get much more glorious dividends abroad than you can get here. But again, you have to live with the currency volatility, and with the dollar probably headed up right now. Keep that in mind if you take a look at that opportunity. Okay, let's go to the movies. And let's go to the movies. Harry Blaser and I discussed Scientists Under Attack during our interview. And Scientists Under Attack by Bertrand Verhaag, fabulous documentary, now available for free. You can get the video in the commentary on Soleri.com for today's Soleri Report. Scientists Under Attack documents the efforts to suppress scientific evidence and really destroy scientists that question genetically modified organisms. The state of junk science is so bad. John Rappaport has written a lot about it, but it's really been junk science that's been underpinning the GMO. And the problem with the junk science is we've reached the point where someone like me just says, it's all junk. I don't have time to sort through whether it's junk or not. And so unless it's a highly reputable scientist who's known to people I know and trust that I can verify, it's all just, you know, corporate-funded gibberish. And this is the problem that we were referring to before. Productivity has been destroyed by corruption, and that includes people like me thinking that essentially most science is junk. I wanted to just, last week's movie was Concussion, and since there was no money in market, I wanted to mention it. Concussion is the story of a very brave doctor who literally brought about the real illumination of the concussion problems that were occurring with NFL football players. It's quite amazing. And of course, he had to take on the entire football industry. And the vested interests that didn't want this story told were extraordinary. And it's a perfect example of what's now going to happen throughout society. It's really a brilliant metaphor for the fact that we have throughout society all sorts of things that where people's bread is buttered, but they're destroying fundamental productivity because they're destroying innocent people and they're destroying innocent lives, and they're doing a variety of things that are just counter to the truth and counter to ethics or counter to the law. And if we're going to get back to fundamental productivity, it's a matter of illuminating these one by one and turning things around. And that's going to hurt a lot of people because all of our bread is buttered with the way things are. And when things change, there's an endless series of inconvenient truths that we need to address and listen to. And it's the same thing I ran into during the housing bubble. I tried to warn essentially the whole country year after year after year. And it wasn't just Washington and Wall Street it didn't want to hear. It was the general population was vested in a model that was making everybody a lot of money. And whether the value of their house was going up or they were doing home construction or home building or they were a decorator who was doing decor and home improvement, it went on and on. But the vested population was or the population was deeply vested in not hearing what was really going on. So Concussion is a great example of just such story, and a guy who was very stand up, and the doctor was very brave and managed to get the story told in a way that's helped a lot of people. Okay, the interview. Something very exciting is happening, and that is that my go-to person on food, Harry Blaser, remarkable human being, remarkable friend and ally for many, many years, has agreed to do a series on food on the Solari Report. And as far as I'm concerned, to understand food on this planet, you have to understand how the world really works. And Harry's understanding of geopolitical finance or global geopolitics, global finance, and how it relates to the food system is remarkable. And he's spent most of his life working in food one way or the other. Remarkable individual. And so this is our introduction and overview, and then Harry's going to host and lead a series of great conversations on food with his picks of some of the top experts in the world. So I'm very excited about this, and I really encourage you to post comments or send comments, send recommended links. Let's gather together a body of information to really help each other jump the curve on our food situation, because the more we can build independent supplies of fresh food, the healthier we'll all be, and the healthier the whole planet will be. So I really recommend this one. I can't think of anyone I'd rather have you listen to on the subject of food than Harry Blaser. Remarkable individual, and he can contribute an enormous amount of intelligence to your life and your situation. So Solari Report series on food. I'm excited. That's it for this week. In closing, next week, we've got SACR, the emerging multipolar world. We're going to be talking about more on the Ukraine and Russia. The SACR has just posted a warning with Dmitry Orlov and several other Russians living in this country, warning about the possibility of World War III. And we talk about why SACR is really concerned about the possibility of war. So very, very rich, good discussion about the U.S.-Russian relationship. The following week, Dr. Laura Thompson, at the request of numerous subscribers, how to detox from toxic vaccines. If you or someone in your family or a loved one has been harmed by a toxic vaccines, what do you do? What are the steps? And that's a very good conversation from Dr. Laura Thompson, knows a lot about that subject. So until we meet again next week, please don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.